that's a description of the various types of offerings to be made for various people. And that does show a distinction between the people who are consecrated or of higher position for whom greater reparation needs to be made, your ordinary person for whom less has been entrusted, less is demanded, and in particular for the people who are poor, for the poor, for the very poor, so they might not be deprived of the opportunity to make reparation. Even the smallest of sacrifice could be offered depending according to their means. So you really see, it's interesting, isn't it, that when it comes to sin offerings, so much detail is given about the various gradations of what can be offered for a sin offering. So, yeah, absolutely. Okay. Then we move on to a guilt offering, which is in Leviticus 5. And this I have to say is a puzzling thing. Part of it has to do with the fact that the traditions that happened in Israel evolved over time. And so the way that they practiced these sacrifices while they were traveling in the desert was different from the way they practiced the sacrifices once they had settled in Israel and in Jerusalem. And as time went on, the ways in which these things would be expressed is different. There is a sense in which the guilt offering and the sin offering share a common element. The common element that they share is the idea of something creating a distance between the people and between God. In the case of the sin offering, it seems to be a specific sin committed by a specific people. The guilt offering could have to do with other things, and there are all sorts of different passages in the Old Testament that describe some of the circumstances for which there might need to be a guilt offering or an offering of reparation. It could have to do with a sin that was inadvertently committed. It could have to do with the cleansing of someone who had made a vow but who had broken the vow. It could have to do with the cleansing of a leper after the leper had been cured and then to reconcile the leper. There'd be all sorts of little specific instances. I did not make a list of all of the different characteristics because it is kind of a fine point of detail. I guess the long and the short of it is there is not a clear consensus on the part of scholars to clearly separate this is what constitutes a sin offering and a guilt offering, or this would be the circumstance for which you would need a sin offering versus a guilt offering. They have some very similar characteristics to them. The sin offering, as we just saw, was much more detailed regarding the sins committed by specific people or the groups of people. The guilt offering would almost indicate, I think, the fact that the people carry around a certain amount of guilt, you might say, just because of original sin, the natural ways in which people are affected by sinful inclinations, and that there is a constant need for purification in certain types of circumstances. But in both cases, we talk about the sacrifices accomplishing more or less a similar end in recognizing the people's guilt or the people's sin, and then the need to make reparation for that. Let me then go from there to Leviticus 7. And this gets to another significant moment, the idea of a wave offering or an elevation offering. And this is where you may have be interesting to see if you have other things as well in your Bibles. I'm going to start with Leviticus 7:30. Your own hands shall bring the Lord's offering by fire. You shall bring the fat with the breast so that the breast may be raised as an elevation offering before the Lord. That's verse 30. The priest shall turn the fat into smoke on the altar, but the breast shall belong to Aaron and his sons. And the right thigh from your sacrifices of well-being or your peace offerings you shall give to the priest as an offering. The one among the sons of Aaron who offers the blood and the fat of the offering, of the peace offering, shall have the right thigh for a portion. For I have taken the breast of the elevation offering and the thigh that is offered from the people of Israel for their peace offerings, and have given them to Aaron the priest and to his sons as a perpetual due from the people of Israel. Now, in verse 30, where I mention that the breast may be raised as an elevation offering before the Lord, do you have anything different than that? Do you have wave offering, elevation offering? Anything else? Okay. Here's the idea behind that, is that the thing that is the elevation offering is that it's taken before the Lord and it's raised up to be given to the Lord, but then you take it and you give it to the Levites. Okay. There are things that they would burn up anyway, like they would take the fat from something and they would burn up the fat. But when they talk about something that was a wave offering or an elevation offering, in that case, none of it would be consumed. None of what had been elevated. The idea is that you raise it to the Lord, meaning you give it to the Lord, but then according to the command of the Lord, it's then handed over to the priests. So the thing that would be distinct about a wave offering is that it's offered up, but the whole thing is given over to the Levites. As opposed to, it would be completely the opposite of a burnt offering or a holocaust, where the whole thing is burnt up and none of it is given to the priests. Okay, so you see some of these distinctions that's there. I wanted to look for one. I thought of one example of where you might say we have a kind of a wave or elevation offering, and this is Mark 8. This is one of the new passages I inserted. Very familiar though. This is the multiplication of the loaves and the fish. In those days, when a great crowd had gathered and they had nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples to them and said, "I have compassion on the crowd because they have been with me now for 3 days and have nothing to eat. If I send them away hungry to their homes, they will faint on the way, and some of them have come a long way." His disciples answered, "How can one feed these men with bread here in the desert?" And he asked them, "How many loaves do you have?" They said, 7. And he commanded the crowd to sit down on the ground, and he took the 7 loaves, and having given thanks, he broke them and gave them to his disciples to set before the people. And they set them before the crowd, and they had a few small fish, and having blessed them, he commanded that these pieces also should be set before them. And they ate and were satisfied, and they took up the broken pieces left over, 7 baskets full. There were about 4,000 people there. Now, it doesn't say raised up, but there are passages at which you say he raised up his eyes to heaven, or what did Jesus do? He gave gave thanks, which is eucharistein, so the word from which we get Eucharist is the word to give thanks. So he gave thanks. So I would associate that with a kind of a sense of like a wave offering or of an elevation offering. In other words, something's been given and received. It's raised up to the Lord, but then it's then given back to the people. Interesting thing about the multiplication is rather than it being offered and then given only to the priests, in this case it's offered, but then given to the multitude that is there, and then they're nourished and fed from that. And the idea that once the sacrifice is given, when a person comes in to give an elevation offering or a wave offering, they're giving it away, meaning they're not going to get it back again. So there's a sense that there's a sacrifice. What's interesting is that when they find the few loaves that's there, the person who has them, who might say, "Well, no one else has anything to eat, but at least I have mine," there's a sense in which as soon as he gives it away, he may never get it back again. So there's that sense of the sacrifice, but then from that sacrifice offered up to the Lord comes the grace of the Lord that is enough then to feed the large number of people that are there in the crowd. Okay. That was one example I thought of an actual application of a kind of elevation offering. One at which it's offered to the Lord, but none of it is burnt up. It is a sacrifice, but then it's something that is still taken by either the Levites or, in this case, by the entire people. This then gets us to Leviticus 7, the summary of all the offerings. So here we get to the end. This is the ritual, the burnt offering, the grain offering, the sin offering, the guilt offering, the offering of ordination, and the peace offering, which the Lord commanded Moses on Mount Sinai when he commanded the people of Israel to bring their offerings to the Lord in the wilderness of Sinai. Now, here's the thing I want to say about this. Now, we've just taken all this time to go through these different offerings. When we think about the Triduum, we were just talking about the Triduum before we started this session today. When we think about the Triduum, we think about the Last Supper, and we think about the sacrifice of Christ. Can we say that this is a burnt offering or a holocaust? Well, we can't say that Jesus was burned entirely. I mean, he wasn't burned. But note one of the distinctions of the Holocaust, the burnt offering, is that it's completely consumed, meaning it's a complete offering. In that sense, I think we can say that the sacrifice of Christ is a complete offering. So it has elements of it that even though we're not talking about fire and being burned and completely consumed, it is a complete and total offering. And in that sense, I'd say when we look at the Holocaust, when we see examples of, say, the sacrifice of Isaac, which is described as to be a burnt offering, which is similar. Abraham sacrifices his only begotten son. He's told to do it as a Holocaust, a burnt offering. God the Father offers up his only begotten son, Jesus Christ, for our salvation. So I'd say it has an element to it that is like a Holocaust or a burnt offering, even though there's no fire. Can we say that the sacrifice that Jesus offers is like a cereal offering or a grain offering? Yes, we can, because the night before he was sacrificed, the night before he was crucified, he took bread and he offered up unleavened bread. And like a libation offering, absolutely, he took wine and saying of the bread and saying of the wine, this is my body and this is my blood, which is to be consumed. In that sense of being consumed, you can say that's like the burnt offering, entirely consumed. The disciples receive that and as the Eucharist is consumed. Can we say that the sacrifice of Jesus is a peace offering or is a communion sacrifice? To use that's why I like the idea of not just simply saying communion, not just saying peace, a peace offering, but one that establishes our communion with God. A sacrifice offered day in and day out to strengthen our relationship with God. Not necessarily offered. In other words, it'd be offered whether or not there was sin. It's an expression of our relationship with God. So yes, the Eucharist is like a peace offering. Is the Eucharist and the sacrifice of Jesus also like a guilt offering and a sin offering? Absolutely. Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. And so there it's offered up for the forgiveness of sins because of the guilt of the people. And so it's an act of reparation as well. Is the offering of the Eucharist like a wave offering or an elevation offering? Yes, it is, because the bread is offered, is brought to the altar, is lifted up, and consecrated, but then received again and then given to the people, not just the priests, but given to the people like we saw in the multiplication of the loaves. So there's sort of my grant. It took a long time to get to this point, but to say that I think all of these different types of offerings that you see in the Old Testament, whether it was the sacrifice of an animal or the offering of grain or whether it was because of the guilt of the people or whether it was to strengthen their communion or whether it was in the manner of it being completely consumed or in the manner of it being just simply lifted up, in all of these elements, we see signs of the sacrifices we now celebrate in the Eucharist and the Mass.